There is a mystery at the heart of how our bodies renew themselves with the food we consume, so magical that many of us pray before we eat. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Do you say grace? Is a spiritual hunger behind the way many Americans regard their food? Our number 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422, email talk@alaskapublic.org. Did you know that there are now more vegetarians than Catholics in American colleges? More today on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Yeah, we get them all the time up here. We get new people who come to work at this operation, and they're from the lower 48, and they come with these high ideals, and about half of them come up here vegetarians, and we send them to Barrow. That's the end of that. It is odd, isn't it? This idea that there are more vegetarians than Catholics in the college system in the United States. And we don't really think of food as a belief system, but maybe we're wrong in that. My guest is Leslie Leyland Fields. She joins us from Kodiak by telephone. She has taught writing for many years and is the author of a number of books that you probably know about, many pertaining to fishing. In this case, we're interviewing her as the editor of The Spirit of Food, 34 Writers on Feasting and Fasting Toward God. She is also a columnist for Christianity Today. Leslie, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hi, Steve. Well, I'm happy to be with you this morning, although I know we both, you know, the first day back after Christmas break, and I'm struggling just a little bit.
Yeah, well, we're moving slow here, too. but it is, that's just an excuse for a leisurely conversation, I say. Let me put out the phone number again, 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. And the email is talk@alaskapublic.org. Leslie, we have done a number of shows now on food and food security and gardening, and Alaskans have shown a deep interest in this issue. I remember a few years ago we kicked off the year with a talk of Alaska about energy, and the response was so overwhelming that we just kept doing energy shows because that's what people wanted to talk about. Mm-hmm. Their feeling was that Alaska was getting not with the program, that Alaska was one place where we could do a lot in energy conservation and all that sort of thing, and it wasn't being done. And so they didn't just want to talk about, you know, the usual political stuff. They wanted to talk about how can we get ourselves more efficient energy-wise. When you live in the bush, this can be extremely important. And so we kind of went down through that. Then the latest one that gets everybody talking is about food. So many people they're concerned about their food supplies. They keep saying, well, we only have a few days' supply of food really in the state. And after that, if the boat stopped coming in, we'd quickly be in trouble. And we're now to the point where the governor is calling on people to have stashes of food around the state in case of emergency.
Right.
And yeah, so this it's just something on people's minds.
It is. And I think Alaskans have always thought more about food and always thought more about energy because so many of us live away from the cities. Even our, you know, our largest urban center, Anchorage, is placed within, you know, a vast wilderness. And so the larger question of how do we live in relation to our environment and how do we live, within creation in a way that is not only, you know, sustainable for us, but also for the land itself. And I think Alaskans have been thinking about these things, you know, for a longer time than people down below.
I think definitely we could get some interesting calls, you know, about this. When you start looking at the spiritual dimension of food, and your book, The Spirit of Food, is very good for provoking a lot of thought on these issues, you realize there's a lot of stuff we don't think about. I mean, one thing that I was drawn to right away as I went through these essays, mostly short articles, which unabashedly link food and God and Christianity. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, some of there's a Jewish one, for instance, mm-hmm. and it's more really about spirit, I think. But you have it made me think about in my own family and how my mother always insists on grace. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's not particularly, you know, strict about it or anything like that. She's just sort of expect it. And it's a moment of fellowship around the table.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where the family, I think they're even starting to hold hands now, mm-hmm. which is mm-hmm. a new innovation in my Presbyterian family.
Oh, Presbyterian. Okay, right. Well, see, I have a Baptist background, and man, Baptists, we're into holding hands.
Yeah, right. Well, things have taken a somewhat Pentecostal ring in the Northumberland Presbytery lately,
And
I think it's only a matter of time until people start saying amen,
amen
during service.
Hallelujah.
But I may be wrong about that. It just they have loosened up quite a bit from. From the days and I would go to that sanctuary. I'm still a member of that church. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I'm still a member of that family.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
And one thing that is pointed out in your book, I think it's even in your essay, in your opening essay, is that sometimes the saying of grace is the only thing left in the process of our meal that is directly linking us with where our food comes from.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, that's what it's an attempt to do, is to stop before, you know, everybody plows into the food, stop and acknowledge where this food came from. And, you know, and for me, that's acknowledging that it ultimately everything comes from the hand of God, from the generous hand of God. But it's also to just, you know, take a moment to recognize this food, hopefully it came from the earth. Well, hopefully it's the earth rather than a chemistry lab, right?
Yeah.
You know, it came from the earth, and God made the earth, and it passed through many hands, including the hands of the person who made it. And it's a very important thing to sit down and acknowledge, okay, we are needy, dependent, hungry people, and we need one another. And you look around the table, and, you know, we hold hands and link ourselves together because we really do. We need one another. And we all need this food that is set before us. We are not self-dependent, self-sustaining people. We want to think we are, especially as Americans, and maybe even sometimes especially as Alaskans. You know, we don't need anybody. We don't, you know. But the acknowledgement of dependence on one another and on God, I think it's the source of gratitude and helps us then, you know, receive the food in such a way that it's not feeding just our bodies. We want it to do more than feed our bodies. Our bodies are not just machines, right? We are body, soul, and spirit. And when we stop and say grace and take that time to acknowledge all of these larger realities, then I think we are fed, you know, even more deeply. We are fed body, soul, and spirit.
Well, I'm sure there are listeners right now that think, hey, wait a minute, this is public broadcasting. I could go down the dial to the Baptist station for this type of stuff. You know, why does she have to be bringing God into all this? I think I will put the question to you because obviously, you know, it's a matter of belief for you, but you also show and demonstrate with the choice of what you've put into this book, you know, that there's some stuff a lot of us might not be looking at.
Well, definitely. I mean, you don't have to believe in God to recognize that. I mean, we all know that we are spiritual beings as well as physical beings. And I think even, you know, people who have another belief system recognize that there's more going on with food, you know, than certainly that our media is showing us. And I think, you know, we've all been, the media has reduced food to just a consumer item and has kind of brainwashed us all, you know, into you know, obey your thirst, you know limits, no boundaries, and just for us to be just almost sort of purely animal and feeding just to feed our bodies, our animal appetite. And I know many people who don't believe in God, but who know, hey, this is wrong. I am a spiritual being, and food is more than simply, you know, gasoline in my gas tank. And the larger question that's posed to all of us, I think, as human beings living on this planet is, how do we live in an integrated way, not in a, you know, our age of information and the industrial age wants us to compartmentalize our lives. And I think those of us who are thoughtful, and that's many of us, realize that no, this is, you know, everything is this, we live an integrated life. We should live an integrated life where we should care about what we eat. We should care about how this food was grown. We should care about how the environment is treated in the growing of this food. We should care about the migrant workers who pick the food. We should care about, you know, our neighbors, loving our neighbors. And so this is, you know, this is what I'm really about, is calling us back to a more holistic, more integrated understanding of food and where it comes from and how it feeds all of us. It feeds our human communities. And for those of us who, you know, who are lovers of God, you know, it feeds our spirit and it feeds our relationship with God as well.
It's chefs nowadays are sort of in the vanguard of what they call the slow food movement.
Yeah.
And this is really the idea that if you pay attention to your food, you'll be able to start tasting where it comes from.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people have done this like with wine for a long time.
Right.
But I mean, the same is true with any kind of really heirloom seed. Will give you a taste that you only get from that.
Right, right. So again, yeah, the connection between food and where it's grown, food and place. And we are so disconnected. We have so disconnected food from place. And Barbara Kingsolver talks about this in Animal, Vegetable, Mineral. The phrase she uses is alimentary alienation. You know, we walk up and down the shelves of our grocery store, and everything is so packaged and pieced and chopped up and wrapped in saran wrap. Like, we have a hard time when we pick up that, you know, that can of Cheese Whiz. We have a really hard time thinking, okay, where did this come from again? What laboratory did this come from? And so we really have been disconnected from our food.
I think a lot of people would just as soon be more connected, but they find it difficult. I mean, certainly if you're in Kodiak, you know. I mean, you go out to your you go out to your SetNet site, and that's pretty wonderful, I'm sure.
Yeah.
and you know, that can be fine dining, and certainly there's gardening and things like that. But you go to the store, and your choices can be a bit limited almost anywhere in rural Alaska, and really almost anywhere in Alaska.
It's really true. And it's this very strange paradox that we experience every day here in Alaska, no matter whether you're in a village or even in the city, is that we are incredibly blessed to have access to the land and to resources. You know, so many of us, we put up our own fish, you know, salmon, halibut, cod, crab. You know, we have access to this stuff, and our freezer's full of it, and we have deer and goat and sheep, and, you know, so many people in Alaska, of course, hunt and go out there. You know, we are still hunters and gatherers. But the other part, the paradox, is, of course, our fruits and vegetables and all green-growing things, many of them come from very, very far away and cost a whole lot of money. And, I mean, we don't have a choice. We can't go to the farmer's market, you know, and buy our local vegetables. And Although I suppose in the valley they probably have farmers markets, and that's probably wonderful.
Oh yeah, they're springing up everywhere they can.
Mm-hmm.
There's one in Dillingham, for instance.
Wow.
You know, but I mean, you know, there isn't a root cellar capacity there, and that's what it's really going to take before you can start extending your season.
Right.
And that's really just the beginning of a lot of other things. I mean, livestock rules is another thing. Anchorage, you can keep chickens in Anchorage now, by the way.
That's wonderful.
I have a neighbor. We have a good-sized vegetable garden, and this neighbor was interested in all that, and he got so interested in, he likes landscaping and things like that anyway, so he decided to keep chickens. So he was telling me the other day, he says, hey, I got some Christmas eggs for you.
Oh, wow. Oh, man, I wish my neighbor had chickens and gave me presents like that.
So it's kind of a I think it's coming along.
It is,
as we say, and indeed in your book, at one point Wendell Berry is quoted as saying, you know, there's so few farmers anymore that their choices are limited. They can easily be squashed. They have to make difficult choices all the time. If you want to reform agriculture, you've got to start with the consumers.
Yeah,
and that's a real good point.
Yeah. It is a really good point, and I feel as you do, Steve. I'm really excited to see what's going on around the state in terms of agriculture. Just right here in Kodiak, and there are, I think maybe last year there were 40 hoop houses or high tunnels, you know, the kind of the greenhouses, the very high greenhouses, and I think this year there are going to be maybe 80 hoop houses, and people are able to, you know, extend their growing season by a number of months. And I've got good friends who have three hoop houses, and it's amazing what they're able to grow. So yeah, this is all really encouraging, and back to, I mean, part of my concern is again, you know, this integrity to return the wholeness of eating, to this whole sense of connection to the earth, and how do we live as, you know, as stewards of God's earth. And so I'm excited to see more people participating in that activity that begins, you know, as someone who reads my Bible, you know, it begins back in Genesis, that God created Adam from Adama, and Adama is, you know, is the word for, a lot of scholars think it's not just soil, it's not just ground, but it's arable soil. So, you know, man is, you know, the soil man, you know, the gardener man, and puts him in the garden, and this is the first work that we're given to do. So, you know, I think it's exciting that people are returning, you know, to some of this work.
What does your Bible, the version that you're reading, what does it do with the phrase about have dominion?
Yeah, that's a great question, and that's something that I've been looking at, and actually a lot of Christians have been there's a whole slew of books that have come out in the last few years, and there's one that's called Dominion. It's called Dominion by Matthew Scully, and it's an examination of that whole concept. And the way that I understand dominion right now is this, that God gave the earth and creation to man not to exploit it and to abuse it and do with it whatever he wanted to do. No, the idea is that man is God's representative on earth, and he is to be the caretaker, the steward of a creation. It's not his. He's to care for it and tend it and allow it to flourish.
Well, of course, so maybe the King James Version, you know, which came from a interesting time in history.
Yeah.
Maybe that's kind of off. That word dominion just in the modern sense isn't the right word for that.
Yeah.
For what was in the Aramaic or wherever it came from.
Right.
I don't even know where it came from in this case.
Yeah, and the other thing is, in the King James Version, you know, when you put, you know, God placed man in the garden to dress and keep, and that's the phraseology that King James uses. Well, a better, a more accurate translation of that is to cultivate and watch.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's clearer. and the sense of, you know, the watch care over, you know, over this garden that is our earth. And the other thing that I think we as Christians have kind of forgotten is that, you know, God places man within the context of this garden and also within the context of all of these other creatures that he has created. And God calls the creatures, he calls it all very good. And we as caretakers over all of creation, we're to see that animal life and bird life and fish life and all of this is to flourish. It's to flourish under our care, not to be destroyed, not to be exploited, not to, you know, but it's all about the flourishing of God's creation. So I think that's a much better understanding and a more biblical understanding of dominion.
And when you say and pronounce it good, it goes right back to the saying of grace.
Yes, right.
Where that's kind of part of what initiating a meal.
Right, yes, pronouncing it very good. And always this connection between that pronouncement and then a sense of gratitude and wonder, really. Look at this food before us. Look how beautiful it is. Or even if it's, you know, beans and rice, it doesn't matter. It's still beautiful. And it's wondrous. It feeds us. It gives us life and breath and health. And so, yeah, I think it all stems back to the very goodness of creation.
We're speaking with Leslie Leyland Fields from Kodiak. She is the editor of The Spirit of Food, 34 Writers on Feasting and Fasting Toward God. And it's a cookbook, too. I think we should say that. Every essay, 34 of them, and then there's also more at the beginning and end. So there's quite the stack of recipes in here, very directly tied mm-hmm. to the essays that you have put in there. Now, some of those you took from other sources, but a lot of these appear to have kind of promoted yourself here.
I'm not sure what you mean by that, Steve. You know what? Yes, I kind of commissioned these essays.
Yes.
Right, exactly. So I have a very wide and broad network of friends and writers all over, and I knew, oh, this person would be wonderful to write about fasting. This person would, you know, could write about the farmer's market. And so I wrote to them. I said, I'm writing this book, doing this book on the spirituality of food, and, you know, would you consider writing something about your own food practices? And so, yeah, that's what people did. And it was just a truly amazing project. And I felt just as fed, you know, by reading all these words about food as if I mean, it was just a feast. It was a feast for me, even as I was working on it.
Well, it certainly, it's making me think a good deal and making me realize that there are some things about food that I hadn't thought about in this way. So my hat's off to you on that one. I don't know if I can bring the listeners along here, but we'll give it a shot. You conclude the book with a recipe for bread, and mm-hmm. I have to admit that it is a recipe that is not the way I would make bread, but it turns out that it worked. And maybe you can synopsize that story a little bit here as I give out the phone number, 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422, email talk at alaskapublic.org. We're talking with Leslie Leyland Fields, the editor of The Spirit of Food. We have some calls waiting, and we'll be getting to you in just a moment. But first, yeah, I want to ask you, you know, to just kind of, if you can, summarize what your, you know, the way that you conclude this book with this bread recipe.
Yeah. My essay is called Making the Perfect Loaf of Bread. And so, of course, it is about making bread, but it's... It weaves together a lot of strands all around the theme of making bread and the idea of perfection and what is perfection and, you know, how do we make the perfect loaf of bread. And part of that, one thread of that story is the story of a young woman named Hannah who came to live with us and work with us probably now 6 or 7 years ago. And Hannah arrived at our fish camp island very, very thin. She had a lot of eating issues. She had a lot of issues with anger and depression. And over the course of that first summer together, we spent lots of time in the kitchen. And I make all my family's own bread. I make probably 10 to 15 loaves of bread every week out there.
I'm getting hungry.
Yeah, and I make all kinds of bread, all different kinds of grains, and I've made bread my whole life, so it's a great joy that I have making bread. So I'm sharing this joy, you know, of making bread with Hannah, and it becomes sort of therapy, you know, the making of this huge pot of dough, which you lean your body into, and it's so physical, and the dough feels so alive. I think that's, you know, we bread makers, we just feel like we're creating something that's living and growing, and it really was incredibly healing for Hannah to, you know, she was at war with food and at war with her past. And just making bread and the physicality of cooking and you know, bringing together God's beautiful fruits and vegetables and serving people. And it was so healing and wonderful. And Hannah left after that first summer just a changed woman in so many ways. She came back again the next summer, and the same thing happened, you know. I just felt so blessed to be part of her healing, and that food was a part of it. But during that second summer, she and I created this bread called Tiger Bread, and it's kind of a sweet, kind of a vanilla-y, eggy kind of bread, then that's swirled with chocolate bread. So that's what we call it, Tiger Bread. It was so wonderful, and we got it just exactly right. We were just so proud of our Tiger Bread. Well, about 7 months later, you know, Hannah left our fish camp back to our other lives, and we got a phone call, and Hannah had taken her own life. And, you know, it was such a huge and terrible loss to her family, to my family, and so I have her story in there, and I end with the bread recipe as a way to honor her, but also as a way to say, yes, you know, the making of bread and the making of food, all of this, it can bring so much healing to us, and it can bring wholeness to us. But at the same time, I also want to say that it can't heal our souls and our spirits completely. Only God can do that. Food is not enough. Food is wonderful, and food is life-giving and life-restorative. But food by itself is not enough. And so that, you know, that was brought home to me through Hannah's death. But I have wonderful memories of all that was done in the kitchen together and all that was done over the loaves of bread that we made. And so,
the creation of the bread lives on.
Yes, yes, and it goes on. And I have heard from people who have written back and said, I've made this bread. It is wonderful. You know, I think of Hannah when I make it. So, yeah, I'm so pleased that I was able to sort of pass that on.
Well, I want to take a little break here, but Leslie, I want to ask you, do you feel when you're in the act of your cooking, your chopping or whatever, is that a form of prayer, really?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's a form of worship.
Hmm.
It is. It is indeed.
We're talking with Leslie Leyland Fields as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
the Muskox Producers Co-op, whose Alaska Native members hand-knit Kiviute items. Information at www.kiviute.com. Q-I-V-I-U-T.
So one day I'm sitting in the office, and Jeff Kennedy is sitting next to me, and he comes erupting out a word of Yupik. He says, Gaishpa. I said, what? He says, Gaishpa. And he picked it up from John Active, and so it goes. So now I'm saying it too. When I get hungry, and we were talking about your bread, you're making me hungry, and I just want to say, Gaishpa.
Wow, what an intriguing word. And what does it mean?
I'm hungry.
Oh, okay. Feed me.
I want to eat.
What's for lunch? That's what I want to know.
Yeah. Well, Leslie Landon Fields, thanks for playing along with me on this program. And generally speaking, public broadcasting wants to put religious matters at a distance, mm-hmm. and maybe speak of them in an academic sense. But the community radio that I came from isn't like that. You know, down in Pocahontas County, West Virginia, on WVMR, I had to learn phrases like dinner on the grounds. Because that's when we did the announcements, this was often what would happen, that there wasn't just a service, but there was dinner on the grounds at the church. And I had to learn these things because this was in the folkways of the people. It was intertwined. The religion and the folkways were completely intertwined and integrated, and it would be untruthful to not be speaking of these things.
Right.
And
it's also sort of a violence that, you know, if we have to pull ourselves apart to compartmentalize, okay, here's sort of my public, you know, academic self. Over here is my faith and my spiritual life. And that's just, that's just not true to reality. It's all woven together.
Well, let's take a few calls. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. SJ in Anchorage, welcome to Talk of Alaska with Leslie Leyland Fields.
Well, thank you so much, and what a great topic. This SJ over Alaska Sprouts, we're actually busy making tofu and bean sprouts right now.
Oh, boy.
But actually, I was calling because a long time ago, I don't know if I was in high school or just out of high school, but I met someone who told me this story that stuck with me to this day, and I told all my vegetarian friends. And I don't know if it's a native belief or not, but I think it is. And he told me that that some people believe that when you kill an animal, its spirit leaves its body and it doesn't know where to go. And so by eating the animal, you're honoring that animal's spirit and taking it into yourself. And so it can find a home and a final resting place.
I think that you'll find that in many places.
I think that's a really, I mean, it's kept me from becoming a vegetarian my whole life, because I think it's actually, you know, I'm being humane if I know where my meat is coming from and if I'm doing that animal the honor of eating it.
Well, SJ, if you have a minute to stay with us, I'm very curious about your sprout business, but I want to also get you in the conversation about this vegetarianism a little bit deeper.
Oh, sure.
And that is this matter of whether it's really a belief. Because, you know, for many people, most of the vegetarians I know, as a matter of fact, I would say, it's really a moral decision. They say, well, mm-hmm. I don't, you know, I'm kind of suspicious about the meat and where it comes from and how it's treated, how the animals are treated and whatnot, and about how much grain it takes to create the meat. Mm-hmm. And I just assume I'd feel better if I can just keep that, not be part of that.
Oh, sure, and I know lots of vegetarians in Alaska that eat fish.
Or vegetarians, yes.
Yeah, they'll eat. This is, I call it Alaska vegetarian. They'll eat fish. They'll eat caribou if they know who killed it. It becomes more of a moral than a black and white issue, I think.
Yeah, I guess we'll finish this call and then go on to the next call and the conversation there, SJ, but I also wanted to know about your sprout business.
Well, I'll call you sometime offline and we can talk about it.
Well, no, I want to know on the air, you know, this is not necessarily your chance to promote your sprouts,
okay.
You've got an industry growing here and this is local food more or less, and I want to know more about it.
Well, yeah, we grow, I guess before we were making bean sprouts here in Anchorage. Tons and tons of bean sprouts were flown up from California and Washington. So yeah, it's a very small niche market. We supply all the restaurants in town and some of the stores. We're working on all the stores, but yeah, so we've been at it a few years.
So what do you need? I guess grow lights and a bunch of water.
Yeah,
and...
it's a hydroponic operation, so tanks and water and grow trays and lights and the whole nine yards.
Right. And so if we see what Alaska sprouts on the label, that's yours.
Yeah, that's stuff that we've been making for a couple of years now. We've been mostly in the restaurants because they used a lot of sprouts. But yeah, we're starting to break out into the stores and people can find it. So,
right. So what part of town are you in?
I'm in beautiful downtown Spinard. We're near the airport.
An industrial location in Spinard.
Yes, I have a small indoor growing operation in Spinard, which always gets my police friends hackles up.
I would imagine that somebody inspected you to your utility bills at some point.
I get visited all the time. Health department,
EC,
all that stuff.
And you just let them in.
Oh yeah. Nothing to hide here.
So. All right, SJ. Thanks a lot.
Well, great. I appreciate the topic. It's an important one.
Right. And so, Leslie Fields, we come around to this business of religion and morality. And, I guess there would be one religious belief system that would say God tells you how to act. You could also say that spirit and morality are not necessarily the same thing. A person might be spiritual without that affecting their decisions about right and wrong. Do they really have to be co-located, I guess?
Yeah, they do. And I think all of us are inconsistent in some way. I think there's very few of us who really are completely integrated and who live and walk out everything that we believe. But I think that's a goal, for all of us to bring to be people of integrity and consistency whose moral code is based on their beliefs.
So when you and you wrote indeed an award-winning essay about this for Christianity Today, a rather long one, in which you point out, as I did at the beginning of the show, that we got more vegetarians than Catholics in our mm-hmm. colleges now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then you say this is a belief system, and that Christians should be paying attention to this. And this caught a bunch of people's attention.
Yeah, it did. It did.
And I'm trying to turn it on this moral point of vegetarians who are vegetarian for moral reasons, but mm-hmm. don't necessarily think it's a religion.
Yeah, one of the things I'm warning against is that it can be something of a sort of a quicksand that the way that we eat, we can make that kind of our entire belief system and think that we can be morally pure and spiritually pure and righteous simply through the foods that we eat. I think the foods that we eat and how we eat and what we eat is very important, and I think it needs to be consistent with whatever our belief system is. But at the same time, I'm also sort of cautioning against the kind of the self-absorption that can lead to. There's a term, it was coined a couple of years ago by Stephen Bratman. The term is orthorexia, which means right eating. But when right eating can become such an obsession that your whole life is spent in this one concern.
God, it becomes an eating disorder.
It is an eating disorder. And I know I'm close. I have known people whose entire lives revolved around what they put in their own bodies. And so that's a real cautionary tale that caring about what we eat and caring about the environment and creation and the spirituality of food, it can so easily be perverted. This holism and integrity that we're looking for can easily be perverted and turn into just this little self-obsession.
You know,
with
that's
what I'm eating and putting into my body.
This puts me in mind of some friends, and this is way back in the hippie years. Some friends who went macrobiotic,
mm-hmm.
and when you would go to visit them, they looked at the whole world through the lens of their food consumption.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, including sin. You know, sin was not
right.
was something that stepped outside the boundary. It's fairly easy to sin when you're macrobiotic, actually.
Yes, or if you're vegan, or
yeah.
Or a fruitarian, or a raw foodist, and I think you end up living in constant guilt because it's very, very hard to. I mean, you have to be like a monk in a cell to live with such asceticism, and I think ultimately it's defeating because you know who can do that for their whole lives, and we lose the sense of food as celebration and food as something that is beautiful and is meant to, you know, sustain us, body and soul, and not just, you know, is this, does this have a chemical in it, or, you know, how long ago was this squash picked from the ground?
Yeah. Let's go to Charles, joins the program from Sitka. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Charles.
How are you doing, Steve? How are you doing, Leslie? I've read several of your books, but I haven't read this one yet. I've read some of your fishing books. Anyway, I work with the Sitka Local Foods Network here, and one of the things that we've noticed is that a lot of the faith communities are becoming involved with food security. Not so much the vegetarian stuff, but is there enough food for to keep people from going hungry? And I know within our organization, St. Peter's Episcopal Church, St. Peter's by the Sea Episcopal Church here has donated land that we have a communal garden that we run called St. Peter's Fellowship Farm. The local Unitarian Universalist Church gives us office space and a place to meet. We've had a couple of other folks that help with our different ventures that we're working on, with community gardens and trying to encourage different organizations to plant like worksite wellness type gardens and get more backyard gardens, just to try and get more local food in the community because of the food security issues that we run into.
Mm-hmm.
You're also seeing, like the National USA Presbyterian Church, has a big deal. There's several other national groups that are really getting it behind the food security movement. And it's just, it's interesting to see because there are a lot of people who do go hungry or they don't know where their next meal is coming from, and some of them are working poor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a matter of, trying to find out, beyond the food stamps and that kind of stuff, your Salvation Army soup kitchen, those kind of deals, sometimes that's where they end up having to go. So the food security issue is a big issue for a lot of the faith-based organizations.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks so much for calling, Steve. I hope it's okay for me to just jump in here.
Absolutely.
But there is a whole, you're describing this whole agrarian movement, and Christians are a huge part of this. I've been following it myself, and lots of churches are doing exactly.
Not just Christians.
Right, not just Christians, right, people of faith, let me just say. Yeah, people of faith. But there are lots of churches that are starting, just as you described, communal gardens and actual farms. There are a few churches I know of that are farming and are growing food and then giving the food to needy families. And so it's really exciting to see how people of faith are really kind of living out, trying to live out their beliefs in this very concrete way, by you know, returning to the land. Also, the homesteading movement. There's a huge homesteading movement going on right now within various churches, within the Jewish faith, and there's a Catholic homeschooling movement. There's a Christian homeschooling movement. I'm sorry, homesteading movement.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Charles, thanks for the call. Got more?
One thing, too, to remember is we do have a local group now called the Alaska Food Policy Council, and that's alaskafoodpolicy.blogspot.com. And it's several organizations, including the state and different nonprofits and that around the state that are trying to do more food security. So definitely you might check out that website and learn more about what's going on within the movement.
All right, Charles.
And just I'll let you go on to your next guest.
All right, thanks a lot. And that would be Marcia in Petersburg. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Leslie Leyland Fields, Marcia.
Well, hello, and good morning to both of you. And this is a great, great topic. When we were talking, a caller a ways back was mentioning vegetarians and the different tarians. And has the word come up, subsistence tarian? has anybody heard that term before?
I have never heard that.
By golly, well, it's time to coin that one, Marcia.
You know, I think we need to put it in at least the Alaska Dictionary, because how many Alaskans are subsistence-tarians?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
I'd say the majority of us, whether we live in the city or we live in the village.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we did a show with people that had taken the pledge to try and eat only Alaskan for a year. There are some that are very close. So there is that. And I think also, and Leslie and I haven't really gotten into it, but I think we both have a lot of respect for the whole idea, the spiritual aspect of subsistence, which mm-hmm. might be difficult to put into English language cultural terms, but it probably is very deep.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is. And I just have one more comment. It really wasn't necessary for the missionaries to come in the past and even today and teach the native peoples how to say grace in English, because the native peoples of Alaska have been saying grace and thank you for their food from as long as they have been here, because we all know without food we would not be.
I think absolutely, and often the bones and so forth are dealt with respectfully also.
That's right, and as you well know, all parts of the animal is used, you know, whether it's turned into a boat or clothing or a game with bones, etc. So I think that there's a lot of food for thought, no pun intended, on the show today, and I just have one more thing to say, if I could.
Sure.
Well, I miss the greetings going out across the state this year. So I just want to say Happy New Year to my friend Lorena Coates and her son up in Barrow.
Oh, thank you. Last week we had a lost dog born on the air.
Oh, you know, and I heard that, and it wasn't long before that lost dog was found, right?
Thank heavens.
You know, we're a very huge state. But really, we're just a big family.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's why I love doing this show. Thank you so much, Marcia.
Okay, thank you.
As bye-bye. Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
You can find APRN headlines and more online at alaskapublic.org. Local, national, and international news, upcoming events, and statewide community conversation. AlaskaPublic.org, connecting you to Alaska, one story at a time.
Well, maybe, Leslie, just as you say, the preparation of food is an act of worship. Also, the subsisting activities mm-hmm. could be regarded as a form of worship. I mean, certainly, I think there's even an essay about this. When you go out and pick berries,
yeah,
the whole ecology is out there with you.
Yes, Yes, and I loved her suggestion, actually, so I'm playing with the word here. So subsistarian, you know,
yeah.
Subsistarian, there it is. And so, that was a great call and a great reminder, and it's so true that most of us in Alaska really are dependent upon, you know, the land in ways that, you know, aren't true for everyone in this country. So we do have so much to be grateful for.
Well, yes, and you know, I think we've done programs also about social alienation, the bowling alone issue, lack of civic common space, that people playing too many video games and getting fat,
yeah.
Young people not going out, their parents being afraid to let them out. Families now that actually don't know how to prepare food.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody in the family knows. And
right.
and there's an essay in here, a very moving essay about, you know, these people who do a lot of hosting in some Christian organization, and they get young people to come in, and if they're interested, they can join in the cooking and so forth. She sends them out to set the table. They don't know how.
No,
to set
they don't know
the
how.
Table.
Right.
This
right.
is amazing, but it's true.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, and so they have this little ministry of just their teenage sons, you know, would bring their friends over. And so these are kids whose, a lot of them, their parents are professionals. They're working. They don't have time to prepare meals, and they come over, and this is an astonishing thing. They watch pasta being made by hand, and, you know, spaghetti being made from scratch, and they're invited to join in. And that is really one of the most wonderful things, you know, to cook together, to be there in the kitchen preparing food together. There is something that, Steve, I think it's essentially, it's very mysterious that happens when people gather together around food. And I can't bring language to explain exactly everything that happens, but it's something that's mysterious and, of course, very wonderful.
Well, I think in your book there are a number of things that just kind of reach toward things that really can't be.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have the words for it. We just have to kind of stalk it, sneak it up, sneak up on
it
sometimes.
Yeah, and we just have to practice it. We just have to do it.
Practice.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there were some people trying to go to the concert, and there's a guy standing in the street playing a violin with a hat down at his feet.
Mm.
And they said to him, they said, "How do you get to Carnegie Hall?" And the man said, "Practice, baby, practice." Let's go to Sonia in Eagle. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Sonia.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you. I just wanted to say really quickly that we're a family of eight, and we say this grace. We're very heavily dependent on subsistence. Every evening we say, "Thank you for this precious meal, gratefulness we truly feel for root and berry, fruit and green, berry, bread, and humble bean. Thank you, fowl and game and fish. We will try to clean our dish. Amen." And also our four-year-olds sometimes say it. We take turns, and they know it too, so it gives them something to memorize and feel good about, as well as giving us time to really think about where our food is coming from.
Mm-hmm. I just really love that, and even if I was not a believer, I would still like the ritual of mm-hmm. the repeating of the words.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, our family is about, it's very mixed, part Native, part not, part religious, part not, and the thing that we all have in common is a lot of subsistence activities that we do together, so that helps.
And the other part to that is the idea that because this food comes to us, and because we're so grateful to receive it, we eat it all. I mean, that there's no waste. And I think that's a hugely important part of honoring creation, you know, and honoring what God has given us.
Yeah, and it does say try to clean our dish. So.
Yeah.
And this morning we're having some fresh eggs and blueberries that we picked, so we're just really dependent, especially on the fish, and can't overstate how important those things are for us up here.
Well, yeah, and you've been isolated a few times up there in Eagle. And the road washed out.
It's a whole lot nicer when you know that you have enough food.
I reckon it is. How's things going up there in terms of have people gotten into their housing on time, as I understand it?
Yeah, there was a great effort made, and I think that most people are doing fairly well. And, it's really pretty out there right now, just like winter wonderland. My husband is out guiding mushing dogs, and I'm just looking out the window and thinking it's just gorgeous today.
All right, Sonia, we'll let you get back to breakfast in Eagle. Thank you.
Bye.
It's Talk of Alaska. We're talking about food, and more specifically, the spirit of food with Leslie Leyland Fields. And let's go to Linda in Talkeetna. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Linda.
Hi, yes, thank you. I, before I get into my thing, too, I want to just really agree with what she just said about wasting food, too, not wasting it. That's something that we really stress in our home here, too, and just there's so many people that don't have enough to eat. But, what I wanted to think about or see your thoughts on is just the health benefits when we eat foods that are natural and the way God designed it and not being processed. And for me personally, I grew up in a family where, it was very much the bleached white flour and quite a few processed foods. I mean, not everything was processed, but and when we had our first child, I was real borderline on gestational diabetes, and I didn't have a lot of health issues, but there were some things that were there that once I got a book on eating healthy that was talking about whole grain things and things that are more the way God designed it. And I know with the rest of our children, I did not have that problem. And
All right, Linda, I want to cut you off and give Leslie a chance to respond here because you only got about 30 seconds left. And I think there are a number of people with diabetes symptoms who have had exactly the same experience as you. Leslie,
yeah.
You got about a half a minute here.
Yeah, I just want to say, thanks so much for calling. And I think you're highlighting, it's just a huge problem in our country, and we haven't talked about it. Steve and I, we didn't have time to talk about it, but the issue of obesity and the obesity epidemic, and even despite all that we know in our heads, we still haven't changed as a nation. We haven't significantly changed the way that we're eating, and we're eating. We're killing ourselves by what we're eating.
But I think people have the desire. It's more like the direction, I think, in the pathways now. It's about the pathways.
Yeah, and so we have a long way to go on this, but I feel like we're making a good start, this new food movement and agrarianism.
All right, thanks a lot. We got to close it up. Thanks so much to Dave Waldron and Josh Edge. I'm Steve Heimel. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network.
Every Alaskan can make a difference when we file online for our PFD. You can shelter families in crisis, nourish the hungry and homeless, and protect those who have suffered abuse and neglect. And it's easy to share a little of your PFD through Pick, Click, Give. And good things will happen for the causes you care about. This message sponsored by ConocoPhillips Alaska and Mattsu Health Foundation. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.